The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, and mock my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yay!
And the man behind the sound effects is at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And tonight we are your hosts for Comic Book Chronicles.
Yeah.
Make sure to go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and comic book reviews. Follow the Twitter account at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/theclicknation. As to your circles on Google Plus, go to google.com/plus symbol theclicknation. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/theclicknation. We're a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go to cspn.us and check out all the other podcasts on the network, including ourselves and many, many more great shows. We record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you're on a social media platform or service and you're talking comics, make sure to use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles or CBCron and let us know, because we're checking those hashtags.
And you can even use hashtag pay off your poll, because I think it's time we added that one as a notification also.
That one's made it somehow onto the list as well. Another one I've been using myself is also hashtag clicks of the week.
Oh, yeah, we need to do that. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, and also when you go to theclicknation.com, make sure to subscribe to our newsletter so you can keep up with all the latest happenings of the hosts and what's going on in entertainment and comic book news. Just hit that subscribe button.
Nice.
All right. Let's see. In cinematic news, Green Lantern may debut in Justice League 2. WB exec admits first film wasn't very good.
Oh, hold on. It's about time they admitted it, right?
They were spilling a lot of beans about Batman v Superman and upcoming Justice League films and whatnot.
Well, you know what it is? It's all part of the never-ending hype machine now, because believe it or not, this movie's only a few weeks away.
We're into the home stretch.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Absolutely. The term I've been using is cautiously optimistic, and I think that has to be the case with this.
That works. CW's Riverdale series cast misses Hot Lodge.
Okay.
Reports of Iron Fist auditioning actors for Marvel hero Shang-Chi.
Yes. And they're casting exclusively Asian actors, which is awesome.
The Sandman movie loses Joseph Gordon-Levitt, gains a new writer.
Yeah, that was interesting. I did not, I think Neil Gaiman commented on this. I didn't have a chance to read it. I wonder if he did.
I've read something about it a couple of days ago. I think they had changed directors or writers or something on the movie, and I think that's what made Joseph Gordon-Levitt back out. Yeah.
Okay.
And Neil Gaiman, I believe, were saying how he doesn't own the rights to Preacher, like right. DC Vertigo does, so he has no say over what goes on with the movie.
Right. Oh, you mean Sandman?
Sandman.
Right.
Yeah. What'd I say?
Preacher.
Preacher.
Only because Preacher's on TV. That's, you know what I mean? I definitely understand why you would, put one in place of the other, because Preacher is. I think there was some news or at least some stills of Dominic Cooper's Preacher that released this week, if I'm not mistaken.
And more DC movie news, Justice League, they don't say which one, but you assume, I guess, parts 1 and 2 at J.K. Simmons as Commissioner Gordon.
How do you feel about this?
It's a good pickup for them.
Well, it sort of plays into some of the stuff that dropped today and one of the funnier memes that I saw today.
Okay. We'll see what happens when we get there.
Mm-hmm. We're almost there. So we have an announcement that the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the voice cast and the animation style is going to appear on Nickelodeon's animated series. So basically it's going to be like a sort of like a Turtles in Time type of thing, or you know, dimension hopping. And they're going to cross over into the 90s cartoon, complete with the voice cast. And that's got to be pretty cool.
That Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles show on Nickelodeon has been pumping along for a couple of years now. I figured it would be something that would maybe last two seasons at the most and then just go away, but it seems to be a winner for Nickelodeon.
They have toys to sell. If you've ever gone to, I've been telling stories about trying to locate some Marvel Legends figures, right? So what that entails is, you know, making a trip to Toys R Us every now and again. And what I've noticed is that there's definitely a steady market for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle toys. There is a section devoted to them in Toys R Us. And I still see little kids picking up the toys, begging mom and dad or whomever to buy them Ninja Turtle stuff. And like I said, as long as the toys sell, they've got a reason to make the cartoon.
Yep, it's all about the toys.
Yeah, absolutely.
The money makers.
All right, now we get to the big news.
Yeah, we just get to, because we don't really have comic book news, but
right.
Spend a couple minutes discussing the big trailer that was released today for Captain America Civil War.
Yes, and spoiler alert, I'm ringing it three times because there's people out there, namely, I'm talking about you, Dirt, I know you're listening, who have not seen this yet, and there is a reveal in this trailer. It's related to, let's just put it this way, it's related to a character that J.K. Simmons used to play that's Marvel-related. That is as non-vague as possible.
Yeah, so we can talk about all the other footage first.
Right.
A lot of it, not a lot of it, but some of it was rehashed from the first trailer.
Right. I think the strongest part of this trailer is that it very clearly lays out what the basic conflict is.
Does it?
I think it does. The basic conflict. I'm not talking about the interpersonal conflict, but the basic conflict.
I feel like the personal conflicts is sort of focused more than. Because Baron Zemo is the villain who we still haven't seen. We
right.
don't know what his role in the movie is.
Right. When I say the basic conflict, what I mean is the whole basis for any sort of conflict between the two sides, Captain America and Iron Man. We actually have General Ross explain, that entire discussion. You know,
right,
lays
right.
out exactly what's going on. And I think for anyone who has no idea what's going on, that lays it out right then and there.
And it's good that they showed those three clips.
Right, from the previous movies.
So for those who don't know, we saw clips from the Battle of New York, helicarriers crashing in the D.C. area, and Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and Sokovia floating in air from Avengers Age of Ultron.
Age of Ultron, right. So, you know, what we have is a recap of some of the motivations and driving forces that are getting us to this point. And obviously, they're not going to tell the entire story, but we have an idea of what one of the basic conflicts is in the story. We're going to learn a lot more. Some of what I've read basically says that the movie still has a lot more to it. We have not yet completely been spoiled, which is good, or at least I hope that's the case. So, you know, it's exciting. I'm getting to the point where I really hope this is the last trailer. We were discussing this right before we went on the air. I don't think I want to see any more footage.
I think, yeah, it has to be the last trailer because it comes out in 2 months.
Right. I really hope that's the case.
Which is...
really, really hope.
It boggles my mind that it is just 2 months away.
Yeah, unbelievable, man. Listen, we are almost at the Ides of March, mid-March. And we're only weeks away from Batman versus Superman. And once that's out of the way and we're done kind of hashing that one and picking that one apart, we'll be taking a look at Captain America Civil War.
I do want to point out two cool scenes with the one of the newer heroes to be introduced into MCU, Black Panther,
mm-hmm.
Chasing down the Winter Soldier on a bike.
Yes.
And then fighting him on a rooftop and then having a helicopter taking fire on him. And we see, I guess, his armor is bulletproof because he sort of stands there and takes the bullets like, hey, this is nothing.
Well, I don't know if it's nothing, but he definitely deflects the bullets, you know, without effort. You know, it makes you think, well, it's got to be a super duper flexible armor. Like you gotta wonder how, I guess the vibranium is completely absorbing the kinetic energy. That's why he's not feeling or moving anything. You know, he's not feeling the impacts or the recoil.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, that's a great scene. I'm trying to think there's a great homage without spoiling too much. There's a great homage to a cover that, involves Hawkeye.
Okay.
It's a cover. It involves from Hawkeye and another character. It's an Avengers cover.
Oh, okay.
It's an old cover.
Yeah, we did get a cool Hawkeye shot.
Right. Well, I'll just spoil it real quick. It's Hawkeye and Ant-Man. You can figure that one out. You know,
Hawkman, or I mean, might as well talk about it.
Right.
Hawkeye shooting an arrow that has tiny Ant-Man on it.
Yep. Tiny Ant-Man.
And then the final 5 seconds of the trailer. 5, 10, 15 seconds of the trailer.
Pretty much blew everyone's mind.
Yep, we get our first look at Spider-Man and Avengers/Marvel movie.
Hey, everyone. Yeah.
Posing with the shield.
Yeah, that was a pretty nice entrance. I got to give the Russos credit for directing that particular introduction, you know? The way they place him in the story at that particular juncture is pretty cool.
We got animated eyes.
Mm-hmm. We got a pretty retro, cool costume.
Yeah, you can definitely see that costume getting upgraded in future movies, especially since they like to upgrade everyone's costumes every movie. Gives them more merchandise to sell.
Right. But it's very... Listen, that is like one of the most classic renditions you will ever see on film, on screen, of the Spider-Man costume.
See, my question is, what point in that big montage battle does that take place? Is that like after they're all done fighting each other and somebody swings in?
I was about to say
it would have to be after.
I suspect it's towards the end,
because obviously they run at each other first,
right?
So how would Cap get his shield back before that?
Right. I agree. So that's that. So that's the big trailer that dropped this week. But in other news, I wanted to also remind listeners and viewers of the Comic Book Chronicles that Netflix and Marvel's partnership with Daredevil is coming back to Netflix, and it's going to drop on March 18th. And that is only, believe it or not, 8 days away from today, a week from tomorrow. So it's March 18th.
Maybe I'll finish Jessica Jones by then.
Yes, I would say, I don't think it's necessary, but you probably should. I mean, look at what we're getting now. We're going to have Daredevil dropping on Netflix next week, and the week after we're going to have Batman Superman. What a time to be a fan of comic books and comic book cinema and TV.
I made this point earlier today online, but it's kind of fascinating to see how a comic book trailer can drop and dominate the social media discussion for hours on end, in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, you know what it is, because
everyone in anticipation of it.
Exactly. It's got a lot of it's got a lot of positive feedback. It's nothing negative for the most part. You get these, you know, cool little snippets that everyone puts together into memes. I think that's a big driving force of it.
Yeah, I even made some GIFs.
Animated GIFs or GIFs and memes out of these, out of stills from these trailers and whatnot. I think that definitely drives some of the social media traffic. But listen, at the end of the day, what we have are great products that are being pushed and marketed, and I think all of our appetites are like completely whetted. we're all salivating at the bit, you know, chomping at the bit now, trying, you know, just waiting for this stuff. And you know, it's funny. I dug up. I was doing a little bit of house cleaning before we move on from the movie and cinematic news, the TV news. I dug up something I picked up at New York Comic Con. And I've got a stack of these. They're business cards that were distributed at the Marvel booth. If you can see this, it's the, I don't know if you've gotten any of these at a con. It's Nelson and Murdoch, attorneys at law, representing the good people of Hell's Kitchen. And on the back, it's double-sided. It says, tweet using hashtag Nelson and Murdoch, www.nelsonandmurdochlaw.com. This is like a really legit feeling business card, and that's what's cool about it. You know, like any of our listeners and fans who's a grown up will understand what I mean when I say that. So, you know, this cool little bit of promotional material is, you know, it's kind of cool that that Daredevil is getting ready to drop in. I finally dig this out of, like, you know, some pile of stuff, you know, that was probably in a bag from New York Comic Con last year, and now March 18th, 2016 is literally almost a week away, and season 2 of Daredevil is coming. You know, we got some more clear looks at the Punisher and Elektra.
And we had a commercial during the mid-season premiere of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Tuesday night.
Correct.
Speaking of which, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is going all Secret Warriors and Hydra on us.
Definitely. We're getting introduced to some of the characters in Hickman's Secret Warriors series. I'm glad that Eclectic, shout out to Eclectic, is watching this and reminding me that some of these characters are not necessarily going by their comic book code names right away.
Yeah, because so, I guess they're not part of the team.
Exactly. So, I kind of forgotten. Like I said, I think we've mentioned it before. I think we all sort of need to catch up on Secret Warriors and kind of refresh our memories as to who these characters are, because you know, Eclectic dug up some, you know, a character named Slingshot, who apparently is being done now on the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show, and they've given her a slightly different codename at this point, Yo-Yo. But they just introduced her. It was a pretty effective episode. It was a pretty good reintroduction at the mid-season mark, the mid-season premiere. So, you know, hopefully we get to a point where whatever connection it has with Civil War doesn't completely throw the show off the rails. You know, I'm hoping that they're not kind of holding back until Civil War drops, because that's sort of what happened with the first season.
I feel like they've learned their lesson from that happening the first time.
Right.
Now that they can incorporate the crossovers a little better, mm-hmm. and have it, because now they're almost telling their own stories, not really having to rely on MCU tie-ins to keep fans watching.
Right.
So, at least until, I guess, it was like they're biding time until whatever year, 2020, when the Inhumans movie drops.
Exactly. That's a long ways away.
Yep.
It's a long ways away. All right. Is there any other cinematic TV news that we want to drop?
No, talk about? We'll drop an ad read.
Aha.
So visit cspn.us, then click the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, etc. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment that helps us keep the Comic Chronicles podcast free for our listeners at no extra cost to you. Amazon through cspn.us. Do it today.
Nice.
And we can get down to doing some reviews.
There's no comic news at all?
And it's something about, there was this one article.
Oh, by the way, something did drop tonight. Kingsman 2 has enlisted Halle Berry as head of the CIA in that movie.
There's a second book added to DC Superhero Girls graphic novel series.
Oh, Tim, you've gone underwater.
How am I now?
Going underwater. You're still there. Mm. The gremlins have transferred from Roddy to you.
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, this sounds no good.
Sound normal on my side, but that means nothing.
Yeah, I definitely hear you sound like you're underwater. All right, let's see if we can't. Soldier on, and hopefully it'll clear up on its own. Just real quick, we had more teasers for who's taking what side in the new Civil War 2 crossover this year for Marvel. Let's see what else we have. I'm just kind of throwing a couple of stories out there just so that we do cover some basic comic book news before we get to our reviews.
How do I sound now?
Like you're in Atlantis.
All right.
Maybe you got to unplug your headset and then replug plug it back in. Sometimes that does the trick for me. You know, double check your Google Hangout settings too. In the meantime, just scrolling through some of the comic news to see if there's something that we need to discuss.
Testing.
Nice. You are back above water.
Google Plus settings.
There you go. So Marvel has put Neil Gaiman and Mark Buckingham's Miracle Man on hold for now. Apparently it's taking even more, there's some delays with the upcoming issues. So, anyone who's a fan of that, I stopped picking it up. We'll just have to wait a little bit longer for it. They will be resolicited at a later date. I guess they do not have an anticipated date that these books are going to be sent out. So you're just going to have to bear with them and be patient.
All right, let's get to the reviews.
All right.
Just so we don't have to scramble for news.
Sounds good.
All right, where do we want to start? Let's do, at least I can start with one of the 50th issues from DC Comics, Action Comics.
Yeah, I think we both read it. Yeah, we both read it.
So this is the last issue for co-writers Aaron Cooter and Greg Pak. And Aaron Cooter was joined on art by an ensemble cast, which ended up being a nice cohesive look for the book. I think it's even a couple extra pages added for the 50th. It would have been nice if this was like the end of the Savage Dawn story. Right, but Dawn. I guess that's a crossover still with Superman 50, which I don't think has come out yet.
No, I think it still has, if I'm not mistaken, I'm going to flip to the end of the book. It still has... it does say at the end.
Oh, okay.
To be continued in Superman Wonder Woman number 27 and then concluded in Superman number 50. So there's still two more chapters to the Savage Dawn story. And but there is a big thing that happens in this book, and I'm going to ring the spoiler bell. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I feel like this is like a 12-part story that at least has had parts come out every week, but it's just been too much to keep up with. But yes, big stuff happens, and you've rang the bell, so Superman gets his powers back and gets his superhero costume back.
Yeah, pretty much all in one fell swoop. It felt kind of neat and tidy, a little overly neat and tidy.
Hitting the reset button.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think I read Greg Pak do an interview online basically explaining what happened, and it still didn't help me after reading it. Like, why did any of that happen just now?
Hey, Cooter made it look nice, though.
Yes, he did. I agree with that. It was just it was just on the strange side, in terms of the storytelling. As I said, I couldn't help but think, what the heck just happened?
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to think what else happened in this issue. Did he save the Justice League?
He did. He basically set them all free. He fought... Vandal Savage's they're about to fight Vandal Savage's children. We find out, if you didn't know already, what Vandal's master plan was, which is to redirect the comet back to Earth that gave him his powers to power up his children. And, what we have in this issue is Superman rescuing the Justice League, but they're still down and out. They've still had their power drained because that's what Vandal Savage used to help redirect the comet. So, while the Justice League and Superman's friends are now free, we still have the issue of Vandal Savage kind of holding off Superman in his kryptonite-powered state until his children get exposed to the comet. Superman gets shot with not a bullet, but this is the funny part. An explosion of toxins. When I read that, I was like, really, Greg Pak? You know?
And
go ahead.
I was going to say the toxins pushed whatever the bad cells out of his system.
Right.
I guess, was that the kryptonite that was killing him, I guess? Or that he used to supercharge himself?
Well, the kryptonite was doing both. It was supercharging him and killing him because he used the kryptonite to kill off the mutated cells, but he was also killing the healthy cells. And it was the healthy cells that needed to be cleansed of this, the kryptonite. So the toxins basically cleansed his cells and his body of the kryptonite. And basically he had been depowered, and it was that kind of finishing touch that allowed him to, and I can't help but ring the spoiler bell on this one because it just sounds so silly, but listen, it's comics, right? It basically has the effect of cleansing him of every impurity and making his Kryptonian genetic code whole again and his cells whole again, so that the Fortress of Solitude, which to this point had stopped recognizing him, all of a sudden recognized him again. And, bing, bang, zoom, he's repowered.
And he got his costume back because he was, I think, falling out of the sky, and he was going to fall into the Fortress of Solitude that was shaped like a bunch of sharp blades. And instead of tearing him to bits, it sort of engulfed him. And since he had the kryptonite and all the bad toxins out of his system, it recognized his DNA. Right. And it was like, oh, you're Superman. You need this.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ta-da.
Yeah. Well, I liked it, but at the end of the day, like you said, it kind of left us wanting more, because it's not the end of the story. It's just the setup for the end of the story. There's still two more parts to go.
Yep. So follow along. I guess maybe next week one of us will read whatever, Batman or Superman, Wonder Woman, and see where the story leads us there.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right. I think you liked this better than I did. I just thought it was a little too neat.
I mean, it was fine. Mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for the art, so
I got you.
I didn't really read too much of it. I was kind of just flipping and enjoying the art because it was so long. And I haven't been keeping up with the story, so I was just like trying to get the short, you know.
The gist
of everything, the crib notes.
I gotcha. All right. So let's keep touching on some of the books that we both read. How about, do you have any other DC? Because I don't think I read any other DC.
Only Earth 2 Society number 10, and I just read that for the art. Jorge Jimenez's art is awesome.
Okay.
And I don't really care about their two characters, but they all look nice.
Nice. Okay.
So, I know you read Dr. Strange 6.
I'm glad you got to that, because I saw your notes, and I'm glad that you wanted to touch on this, because this is actually one of my candidates for Click of the Week. I liked it that much.
It's fun watching Dr. Strange throw down.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of the art, you know, we've said it a million times before, Boccolo was born to draw this book.
Part of me wonders, is Jason Aaron setting up the, I'm going to butcher whatever the name of the group or the person, Impicure or something or another?
The Empiricool.
Empiricool. Cool or cruel? Like, is he setting them up like the God Butcher was set up in Thor, God of Thunder? Because that was a badass new character that he, or new villain he set up for Thor that can probably be brought back, you know, down the line over and over if need be.
Right.
I feel like the Empiricool is the same way.
I can see that.
A new, brand new villain. What he's doing, he feels is right. He sees magic as this abomination that has, and that magic and all the magic wielders have to be taken out.
Right. It's funny because we've read similar takes on magic from some of the big science, some of the big brains in the Marvel U, like Reed Richards, and even Tony Stark to a certain extent, you know, saying how they don't understand magic. It doesn't, you know, it's just science that we can't explain yet, blah, 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 you know? So
it's interesting. You think some of the scientists would get involved in the story, at least by like popping up, like just how Iron Man dealing with magic from Madame Mask and Dr. Doom over in Invincible Iron Man. He had Dr. Strange pop up for two issues. But Dr. Strange dealing with science has no one showing up. Time to have anyone show up either, but still.
Right. So, you know, it's kind of interesting. I mean, like I said, it's not the first time we've heard this particular refrain before in the Marvel U, but you know, like you said, yeah, it is kind of reminiscent of the God Butcher story.
And Chris Bachalo's art is nice on it. There was a couple scenes during the fight sequences between Dr. Strange and the Empiricool that it was hard to tell what was going on because of just the coloring and Bachalo's art. I think Tim Townsend, I think, is the colorist on this.
Right.
So like some of the like flashing colors from the explosions, from the spells being cast and whatnot, following that along with Bachalo's art, I couldn't tell what body parts were being used. Like when Strange like created a monster from the ground or something.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
That got tough.
Right, but at the same time, you almost need to take a step back and just appreciate just the somewhat abstract look of it. You know, the page before when Strange is draining the earth itself of all its magical energy, when he's, you know, basically tapping into the spirit of the earth, the magical spirit of the earth, that was a nice kind of one page splash. You know, that by itself, and I'm going to hold up the page here. I actually have my physical copy with me. This is
that was cool. It looked like the world tree or something.
Yeah, this was a great, great page.
The roots going into the magical roots spurring into the earth.
Exactly. And then you get the next page, which is what you're referring to, which is kind of like, you know, like a Hulk or Thing type outline that's around Doctor Strange, you know, kind of giving him a much more enhanced physical form. But, you know, what we find out is all of this was for naught. And we will see what happens in the next issue because, you know, the ending of the issue and the post credit notes in the book kind of detail some of the complications that are occurring around the Earth now that magic is basically being killed off.
That was an interesting surprise.
Yeah,
those extra pages.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere, but it also serves to help really explain that this is an event with far reaching consequences. And what I also didn't understand, maybe it's because I haven't really been looking at the solicits, the end of the book said that this is going to be continued in an alpha issue or something like that.
It's like Doctor Strange the Last Days of Magic.
No, oh, there it is. Right. Yeah, Doctor Strange Last Days of Magic 1 and Doctor Strange number 7. So there's an extra book in there.
I wonder why they just didn't save it for like issues 7 and 8.
I don't know. That makes no sense. They must have had like an extra spot on the calendar, maybe because they're canceling Black Knight or something. Oh, did I just say that? You know,
I wonder if Scarlet Witch is crossing over.
Right.
Who actually we saw a glimpse of her in Uncanny Avengers number 7. So my little quick notes for Uncanny Avengers number 7 is it's an Avengers standoff tie-in issue, but it really does the job of continuing the stories set up in Uncanny Avengers. It sort of loosely ties in more near the end once the team goes to investigate Pleasant Hill.
Right.
But it's a lot of interpersonal things interpersonal relationships being set up. You see Quicksilver rushing off to go visit Wanda, but just to like do a run by.
Yeah.
Because I guess they're not getting along right now. But he just wants to check up on her. Yeah. Brother Voodoo getting into it with his deceased brother's spirit. You have Cable training Synapse how to use her powers. And then Deadpool doing Deadpool things.
Yeah, Deadpool doing Deadpool things.
I was kind of confused with the whole Maria Hill. Like, was that really her?
Yeah, I lost. You know what's funny is I lost track of where the standoff story was. I think I read this out of order, and I think it would have helped to know what the reading order was.
I think all you needed just to read the zero, like
the alpha,
the alpha, and there was something before the alpha.
The standoff, the welcome.
Yeah, the welcome, the mm-hmm. alpha, and then either this or the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I think 3 that came out this week also.
The Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. one didn't really cross over that tightly into it either.
Which is probably the way you want crossovers to be, so you don't have forced to buy them all.
Yeah.
I just flipped through that, just bringing up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I saw that they were the S.H.I.E.L.D. team was chasing Rick Jones, the Whisperer.
Exactly. And that's pretty much the extent of the tie-in, because they are still following the running story in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is that there is a drive with every hero's weakness on it, and they're trying to keep it out of the wrong hands. And there is a teased return that obviously is not a real return, but I'll ring the spoiler bell. This being a S.H.I.E.L.D. book, you know there's going to be life model decoys left and right. There is a tease that Wolverine is no longer dead. We're talking about Logan, James Howlett, and he sort of makes an appearance in this book, but it's basically implied that it's a life model decoy.
Huh. Okay. Still not enough to get me to read the book.
But No. And honestly, it's probably it's getting closer to the chopping block. You know, I know we've talked about what's going on our chopping blocks, off of our pull lists. I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is getting close.
Yeah, I just don't care about the TV characters enough to read them in comic book form.
Right. All right. So you read Ms. Marvel.
Yes, the last book I read before the show.
Number 5. So just to get people caught up on what's going on in Ms. Marvel, we have, you know, there's lots of stuff going on in Kamala Khan's family life. Her brother has found someone he would like to marry, and it's causing some stress in the family. It's causing, you know, and some of the stress that's caused Kamala to kind of think about how best to divide her time. You know, everyone's time is precious and expensive. So what she decides to do, spoiler alert for anyone who's not yet read this, or the previous issues, she's decided to try to craft a way to be in many places at once. And this issue and the end of the last issue show how that plan has failed spectacularly.
That it does.
Absolutely spectacularly. There's one thing I miss. It's the Alphona art. But this month we have Nico Leon filling in, and it's an admirable job. It's a pretty good. It's a fairly seamless transition.
I might even prefer Leon's
art. It's less stylistic.
I love the. I don't want to say he or she did an arc in the previous volume, or maybe art in another book, maybe.
No, I think it was a previous volume.
But I love, there's so many jokes in the background that are, you catch, like facial expressions and body acting going on, character acting. So many little Easter eggs to just, if you just sit and actually pay attention to the backgrounds, you'll catch so much.
Right.
And this is a possible click of the week for me.
Nice.
This and another book I have to weigh my options are on. I love the scenes with Kamala's family and her future sister-in-law's family.
Mm-hmm.
That was just awesome, especially when the life model decoy melted away in front of them. I guess it's not a life model decoy. That's the other book. But
yeah, exactly. Well, it's a body double. Exactly.
Yeah, body double.
Yeah, it's a body double. Without going too deep into what how they actually engineered these through 3D printing and magic. You know what? You know what I mean?
Things got crazy.
Yeah, it's a little bit easier to just say that they found a way to create body doubles. But you know, it was pretty interesting to see her ex, I would say her ex boyfriend, I don't know if they're ever really dating, but Bruno, her former love interest, Bruno's current girlfriend, and Kamala basically working together to try to save the day. Let's see if there's anything else I want to touch on in this before we move on.
There's a lot of her, Kamala, trying to juggle her,
multiple responsibilities, lives. Yeah. Her dual life, school, work, superheroing, her family.
Which is the reason for her creating all the body doubles.
Right. And, what we find is, it's kind of a classic trope. The body doubles have, spoiler alert, have come together right now over me. I'm going to quote the Beatles and leave it at that. You get it. Without spoiling too much.
I got it.
Cool. All right. So what else? We both read, there's a lot of cool Marvel books out this week.
Vision?
Yes. Let us touch on the Vision. Now, this is a clear candidate for Click of the Week for me. I wish Dirt was around to talk about this. I know he's a fan of this book.
All fans.
Yeah, we are all fans. This is definitely one of the top books that Marvel is putting out right now.
He's make Tom King and Walter have created a sort of a suburban thriller star that just so happens to star superpowered beings.
Right.
It's like Desperate Housewives in the Marvel Universe.
That's an interesting comparison right there.
I'm going to tweet that to them.
Comparison. That's funny. I mean, it's such a deep psychological drama that you would never expect to read about in a book about androids, and that's what that's the hook of this book is, that these androids who are well-developed artificial intelligences, have developed these psychoses and the urge to actually, the malfunctions are basically psychological problems. And, there's a long scene between the Vision and a member of law enforcement. And this particular interaction involves a line of questioning that causes the Vision to, I don't know about go against his programming, but to understand that, you know, in terms of his relationship with his family members, there's certain things that kind of come before some of his programming directives. You know, that's as vague as I want to put it. Because, you know, it's vague, and I want to put it that way because I do not want to spoil this too heavily. I really want people to read this book. We are 5 issues in only. That is not that much. You can catch up with this book very quickly. You know, you can find it on the Marvel app, the Comixology app. You can probably still find this in your local comic book shop. You will not regret catching up on this book right now. It's 5 issues in. You've got to go out there and pick this up.
I love the coloring from Jordy Belair in some of the scenes, like when is it Vin the wife?
No, Vin is the son.
What's the wife's
Viv
name?
Is the daughter, and the wife's name is. Let me check the recap page because sometimes the recap page has all that stuff. Virginia. The wife's name is Virginia.
When she's hovering over the bed in the hospital, just like that looking down visual, and then like her shadow, you know, hovering
casting,
over.
Casting, right.
Yeah, casting over the body, yeah. Sort of the shadows in the room. It just, and then her, the green and reddish, the green from her outfit and hair and her skin tone kind of contrasting out from the sort of darker hues.
Right.
Very nice.
Right. And Tom King starts off this issue with a callback to high school English and some Shakespeare from Merchant of Venice.
So,
you know, this is great, great stuff.
I thought it was a slightly slower issue just because no one died in it, I guess. But
Tim's crazy.
That could be an all right thing.
Slow issue.
No one died. I'm dissatisfied.
No, in all seriousness, this is definitely dealing with the aftermath of what happened in the last issue. So it's to be expected. But, you know, like I said, you know, seeing these things happen to characters who are artificial intelligences, it's an effective twist on the story, you know, and King's doing a great job telling the story right now. Definite candidate for Click of the Week this week.
All right.
Okay. I'm disappointed you did not have a chance to read Mockingbird, number one.
Yeah, I didn't get to it.
Disappointed. This is the one hip-hop cover that came out this week. This is a shout-out to a Kool Moe Dee cover from back in the day. So,
oh, yeah, I will say my comic shop guy did recommend it.
And I'm glad he did, because it was a surprisingly effective first issue. What I discovered in reading this is that it's only 5 issues. I may actually pick this up for all 5 issues because it was that fun. What's that?
It's a limited series?
Yes.
Oh, I did not know that. That makes sense.
5-issue limited series. And
more issues, more comics should be limited series.
Right,
yeah,
right, right.
Get out.
And to be honest, this issue makes very little sense when you read it. And it's still fun. It's still interesting. It still provides a lot of twists and turns to follow. You really can't put all this together. You really can't. But the art is great. The art on this is by Kate Nemchik. The writer is Chelsea Kane. And let me tell you, Chelsea Kane drops at the very end of the issue a note, a long note that basically explains that this issue makes very, very little sense. And what you do need to do is read the next 3 issues, because what it does, it fills in a lot of the time gaps that happen in this issue. And what she intends for you to do is to read the next 3 issues and then come back to the first issue, and it'll all make a little bit more sense. And I appreciated that. I really like the fact that, you know, there was a little bit of a prose explanation here, right here. You know, it's all typed out, typewritten, explaining what it is, you know, what it is that's actually happening and why we should read it a certain way. I kind of like that. I kind of like the guide. I'd rather be told, listen, you have to keep reading in order to make sense of this. And I thought it was a pretty effective hook. You know, and I think your comic shop proprietor felt the same way. He probably picked it up on a lark and found it pretty entertaining.
Yeah, it was behind the register to check out. They usually have 3, you know, picks of the week,
right?
And that was one of them. I forget what their 2 were now, but But that was definitely one.
Listen, I'm adding. I'm pretty sure I'm going to add this limited series to my pull list for the duration for the five issues, because I was that impressed with the writing. I was that impressed with the art. And this is another, you know, sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me. Surprise, surprise. There's a lot of good, you know, a lot of good quality stuff out this week.
Nice.
Definitely, definitely. Do you want to touch on some of the other books we both read? How about The Mighty Thor?
Another possible Click of the Week.
All right. Take us in.
So, Odin versus Thor, the battle we've all been waiting for.
Hold on. There you go.
The battle that spans planets,
mm-hmm.
as they rocket from Asgardia to Saturn to all these other planets. The narration from Jane Foster was, of course, enjoyable, saying how when she was dating Thor, Odin never approved of her, and now here she is smacking the crap out of him with the hammer. We got Malekith marrying the queen of the elves, I believe.
Or the light elves.
Light elves.
Yeah.
So expanding his power, celebrating with his Dark Circle or Dark Cabal, whatever name they're going by.
The Dark Council.
Council. The War of the Realms. Yep. Because everything's a war.
It is. Everything's a war. In Thor, it's the War of the Realms.
Had a battle slash war taking place in Asgardia as the
good
guy.
It's a civil war in Asgardia. Yeah.
As the good guys assemble to fight off, what's Thor's uncle's name? Bor?
Bor. Kull. No. Kull.
Kull.
Kull Borson, yeah.
With the Warriors Three and Sif and Lady Freya, mm-hmm. and Loki for a while.
For a while. So I rang the spoiler bell.
Can't trust him.
Yep. No. We're not spoiling much if we say you can't trust Loki.
Yeah. But what I did enjoy was the last couple panels or page or two.
Yeah,
sort of seen that come. It was funny. Like when I got to about halfway through the book, I was like, "Someone's going to make an appearance by the time this is over," because we haven't seen this person in the all different Marvel just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But then what was interesting was not sure where this person is, but we do see an object laying on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Straight out of Secret Wars.
Yep. So, yeah.
Yep, it's straight out of Secret Wars. I thought that was a nice little cliffhanger there.
I love Russell Diamond's art again. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah, it's really good in this issue because there's so much going on.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's a lot going on in this, and it's dynamic. There's a lot of great panel work. You know, even the non-traditional panels are you know, really convey the action very well. So, you know, there's a couple kind of like jagged panels, like I'm going to hold one up here without spoiling too much. You know, this is a, you know, somewhat non-traditional layout, but it's still very effective.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. We did Thor. How about you do Guardians of the Galaxy, and then I'll do Amazing Spider-Man.
Guardians of the Galaxy is a sort of a duo tale of Kitty Pryde and Star-Lord on a Badoon prison planet, and the majority of the issue is Peter sulking after being kicked out of Spartats and being their king or president, mm-hmm. and almost getting everyone killed, and Kitty trying to get him out of his funk while they're trying to escape being captured. A lot of riffing on Kitty admitting that she has horrible taste in clothing because she's never liked her looks from the, you know, being a 13-year-old with the X-Men through today, and how she even had to steal Peter's clothes when she was the Star-Lord because she has no look of her own.
Okay.
Of course, them going back and forth gets Peter out of his funk. And they do mention that they're on this Badoon prison planet to rescue someone who we never find out who it is or who even clue. There's not even clues to who it could be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's got my curiosity piqued.
Okay.
I wonder if it'll be like another like former member of the Guardians of the Galaxy from the Abnett and Landing like era.
Right.
But I wonder if we saw all them last issue or two when it was the Nowhere Corps.
Right. You know what? We were discussing this off the, you know, like off the air before we officially started the show this week. Guardians, I've been struggling to keep up with Guardians of the Galaxy, and I understand that you like this issue. You like this book right now. It's one of your top books. I've had some trouble keeping up, and I was thinking about maybe moving this to the chopping block. But I have to admit that I probably need to catch up with the last two or three issues to really make that determination. I flipped through this issue this week, and I just was not interested in concentrating on what was going on. But like I said, it's probably due to the fact that I have no idea what's going on. So I need to catch up. But I'm glad that you like this, and it's given me some incentive to try to keep up with it.
Yeah. So what's one you read? So you said Amazing Spider-Man, right?
Yes, I was going to jump to Amazing Spider-Man number 9. Now, I know that some people are not fans of the more mature Peter Parker and the more international man of not mystery, but man of action role that he's kind of adopted, kind of like a slightly less technologically superior Iron Man. You know, there's a lot of spy stuff going on in this because the main antagonist in the story is Zodiac and the various members of the Zodiac and the Scorpio who's in charge. So what we have in this issue is I may be the penultimate issue. We have Spider-Man trying to take out a network of satellites that Scorpio shield satellites that Scorpio has taken over. And Scorpio's trying to do something with an artifact of that's made of the same materials as the Zodiac key. We have some cool space, you know, near orbit adventures with Spider-Man and Sam Jackson Nick Fury, not the OG Nick Fury, but Sam Jackson Nick Fury. And we also have, you know, some developments with Anna Maria. We find out Anna Maria has spoiler alert. Someone new in her life that I don't think I realized was there before, you know, in her personal life. And if you didn't know by now, our good friend Otto Octavius is not dead, and he is basically hanging out in Parker Industries in that stupid-looking brain robot. So, you know, that's still there. That's still a developing, you know, background story. But the bottom line right now is that Spider-Man successfully makes his way from near-Earth orbit back onto Terra Firma, and now we're leading up to what may be the ultimate showdown with Zodiac. It may be another issue after that, but I like this development in Peter Parker's character. I like that he's a little bit more mature, but still got the Parker luck going for him.
Okay, you know, is the same Matteo something artist?
No, we are back to Giuseppe Camuncoli.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Is it sort of a new arc?
No, we're still in the middle of the previous arc. If you go to the last page, the next page, there's a note from Nick Lowe, the Spider-Man editor, and he gives a shout-out to Matteo Bufagni for being the guest artist on Amazing Spider-Man 6 to 8. So it looks like Camuncoli is back for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I like Matteo Bufagni.
Yeah.
Bufagni.
So for me, the ultimate evaluation of this book, you know, is, you know, in my opinion, a positive one. I like this. I happen to be a fan of this particular development in Peter Parker's life, because there's only so many times you can deal with him being down on his luck and being poor, being broke and being a student. You know, it was cool when he became a teacher, and I like that now he's sort of, you know, not graduated, but, you know, taking a cool half or three quarter step forward and become kind of like a junior Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm. Because we know it won't last.
But yeah, it won't last.
Just like with Superior Spider-Man, enjoy the ride while it's here.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. You know, they'll find a way to tear it down and put them back into a down-and-out place. So I think we might be in rapid fire time now. I've only got maybe, let's see.
Oh, we got one more.
Yeah, I may only have one or two more. So why don't you take one.
Kennel Block Blues, number 2, from good friend of the show, Ryan Ferrier, and artist Daniel Bayless from Boom Studios. It's the story about dogs and cats locked in a basically a penitentiary to them, but of course it's just the pen or the kennel. And I forget the protagonist dog's name, but him and some buddies are trying to break out. It's basically like the escape issue of them coming up with a plan, trying to get out through a furnace. The furnace gets turned on. They have to turn back around because they can't get the grate open at the top.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. I wrote my note down. I didn't enjoy it as much as the first issue, but it was still a fine issue. It's only four issues, so we got two more to go. Ryan, of course, did Dave and Dave 2.
Right.
From IDW, I believe. Yeah, IDW. Yes. So very funny writer. The laughs keep coming, especially with the dream sequences done by Daniel Bayless for Oliver is the main pup's name. So when Oliver gets stressed, he starts singing tunes from the TV shows he'd hear when he'd be watching TV with his family,
mm-hmm.
owners. So.
Okay. All right. So I've only got two left. The first book I'd like to talk about is Radioactive Spider-Gwen. I know not everyone is a fan of Robbie Rodriguez's art. I happen to like, you know, kind of the quirky style that he brings. As always, it's the costume design of Spider-Gwen is what hooked me, but I happen to like the characterization that Jason Latour brings to these these kind of alternate versions of characters that we know and love. The Captain America in this Spider-Gwen verse is female and black, and there's a kind of a funny sequence in this book involving Captain Stacy and Gwen referring to Captain America. Basically, what we have here is the culmination of the opening story arc, where we find out that Harry Osborn in this universe is an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. and holds himself deeply responsible for what happened to this universe's Peter Parker. And ultimately we have a showdown between a version of Spider-Man, in this case Spider-Woman, and a version of the Green Goblin. So the bottom line is, if you are, you know, if you're still uncomfortable with these alternate takes, then yeah, it's probably not for you. But I happen to like this one. I think it's well done. I think it's got a lot of cool quirks to it. And I like that, there is this cool dynamic with, Gwen and George Stacy, moving forward. I like that they're the two kind of central characters in the book. And the last thing I wanted to bring up is something that I had dropped from my physical pull list. I had not intended to buy any more issues, but for academic purposes, I've been reading it. And the book I'm referring to is Black Knight number 5. I'm pretty sure this is the last issue. It actually ends with the end. And it wraps up nice and easy, but what we have here is the end of the guest appearance with the Uncanny Avengers. And just as a recap, the Uncanny Avengers basically chase after the Black Knight. We don't completely get all of we don't get the complete backstory as to what the Black Knight did. I think we get snippets of it. He basically goes rogue and basically takes things a little bit too far when dealing with bad guys, kind of giving the extreme sanction with the Ebony Blade. And so what we have is the Uncanny Avengers trying to bring the Black Knight to justice, and they basically travel to Weird World to do it. What they find is that in the last issue, when they fight the Black Knight and his warriors of New Avalon, they strike a deal. They basically take the Ebony Blade away from Dane Whitman and try to go back to Earth. But the Ebony Blade basically corrupts Commander Steve Rogers, and everything goes to hell. And basically, what's determined after a whole bunch of kind of pointless fighting is that the Black Knight really is destined to be the wielder of the Ebony Blade. Dane Whitman is pretty much the only person that can control the murderous urges that the Ebony Blade brings out in its wielder. So what we're left with at the end is a status quo of the Black Knight being on Weird World, in charge of the ruler of a small section of Weird World called New Avalon. And it's kind of a nice, you know, tidy little wrap up to this five issue story, which I think was meant to be, longer. But Frank Thierry found a way to wrap this up in five issues with a nice, neat bow. We have a little bit of a status quo, at least in a corner of the Weird World that's established in this book. So, you know, in the main Weird World book, we're probably going to see a little bit of Black Knight here and there at some point. He's probably going to show up on one of the crazy maps that maybe Archon puts together, right, from the Secret Wars limited series. Because you know that stuff's going to pop up again in the Weird World series at some point. So, it's a nice little wrap-up to the series. You're not missing anything if you don't read it, but, you know, it's somewhat entertaining. The art, it's okay. It's nothing to write home about. I did not actually read Weird World number 4 this week. That came out this week.
I'm an issue behind, so, from this week, so.
Yeah.
Get caught maybe over the weekend.
Yep, got to catch up. Something I didn't mention, Spider-Man Deadpool number 3. Just very quickly, this is a surprisingly good read for me. I know that you have some misgivings about it, but I find that, you know, Joe Kelly's writing on this is actually not, you know, it's actually not bad. The story it's telling isn't bad at all.
It's just a matter of, with so many books, do I need to read it?
Yeah.
Like Spider-Gwen, I'm enjoying, but still didn't read this week's issue yet, so.
I got you. I was going to say that I think this is probably the team-up book that Deadpool really needed. Deadpool was always kind of, not trapped, but always relegated to the X-universe. So the crossover books that you would see, the team-up books you would see would be him and Cable, because those are the natural, those are the characters that were kind of introduced together right around the same time. Back in the 90s by Lee Field and various writers like Fabian Nicieza and I think might have been Louise Simonson, I'm not sure. But at the end of the day, you know, these characters all come from a certain era, and they were basically kept together in team-up books and crossovers in the X corner of the universe. But now to see Deadpool playing off of Spider-Man and the more mature Peter Parker in this, really, you know, allows Kelly to develop, some of the serious aspects of Deadpool, to be honest. I know there's still a lot of irreverence, there's still a lot of comedy, but Deadpool's, you know, developed a lot in the last few years. You know, he's got a daughter that's basically popped out of nowhere. He's got his Mercs for Hire crossover book that they actually pimp in this book. They actually make a reference to it. Deadpool's Mercs for Money. So, they do drop mention of that. But like I said, ultimately, the story they tell in this is actually, you know, it's a great character piece. You know, the character interplay between Spider-Man and Deadpool is pretty good. And it's surprising to me. I didn't think I would enjoy it this much. I haven't picked up physical copies. I can't say that it's must buy. But I can say that it's definitely been a pleasurable read.
Good. Was that the last one?
Yeah, that's it for my rapid fires, and I'm trying to come up with a click of the week because I dropped a bunch of candidates.
Yeah, I've been kind of sitting here debating between my two. It's Mighty Thor or Ms. Marvel.
Nice.
Which almost every week when those two are out.
Yeah, they're candidates. Yeah.
I think I'm going to go, even though I enjoyed all the little moments in Ms. Marvel, Mighty Thor, I think number 5, with it being the end of that arc and so many questions.
Right, and teasing some of the new, stuff that's coming down the road with the cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You know, that was a nice way to tie into the end of Secret Wars. I did like that. That was good. That's a good choice. Good choice. See, now my candidates are pretty diverse. One of my candidates is Vision number 5, because that was just a great read. You know, just to read the Vision talk about all the times he's put his well-being on the line for the fate of the world and the universe, and how that plays into what he's about to do, you know, was such a great, effective way of telling that story. Doctor Strange number 6, you know, despite the fact that that art was kind of, you know, a little vague and kind of choppy for you, you know, when it came down to it, it was only a couple of panels that were like that. I thought the whole story was just, you know, really well done. And Mockingbird number 1 was, you know, just a really, you know, impressive read for a first issue. Those are the ones that really, really stick out to me, including, and we'll include Mighty Thor in that as well. Man, what am I going to pick? This is great stuff.
There can only be one.
Yes, there can only be one. And you know what? Surprise, surprise. I'm going to pick Mockingbird number 1. Believe it or not. Now you're going to want to go read it.
Yeah, I probably will. Probably during lunch tomorrow, I'll have that be the one book I make sure I read.
It was good stuff. Good stuff. And like I said, I'm glad to hear that it's definitely going to be a four or five issue limited series. It's got a limited run. It's there to tell a specific story. So, you know, I think I'm going to be on for the duration.
Good stuff.
Absolutely. All right, let's... do we need another ad read before we wrap it up?
Yeah, before we wrap up, thanks for the reminder.
No problem, because I was looking at the clock trying to figure out if we need it. So, our last ad read of the night is for audible.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. For you, the listeners of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. We personally recommend an audiobook available at audible.com, such as The Best in the World at What I Have No Idea by Chris Jericho, The Andromeda Strain by Michael Crichton, or Jurassic Park, the 25th anniversary by Michael Crichton. You can pick these or other audiobooks free by trying audible.com. To download your free audiobook today, go to audible.com/comicbookchronicles. Again, that's audibletrial.com/comicbookchronicles for your free audiobook. Do it today.
And make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts at TimDogg98 and at CBCron. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. And PCN Dirt is at PCN_Dirt on Twitter. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Make sure to check out his Vines, his rapid fire, his Vine comic book reviews.
Yeah, people seem to love those. So keep giving them those loops. And we'll be back next week as we'll be preparing for season 2 of Daredevil and all the other comic book news that comes out. We'll be touching on it.
Yes.
And, of course, giving you our clicks of the week.
Absolutely.
We are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! Would you believe it's Dr. Doom? What's on your...